many of these.
House podcast site available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
During this past week, the population of the Earth hit 7 billion. Aside from sparking arguments around the world about which child was actually the 7 billionth, who could possibly know? It's a bit of a landmark time to raise some questions about the future and what that will look like. And I want to tap into your life wisdom for the future tonight. If we ever found that child and you were able to pass on a singular piece of wisdom for life, what would it be? I've already had quite a few suggestions flowing in, and I've got a few of my own. What about you? Give us a call on 1300 40 2020 or post on our Open House Community Facebook page. It could be a wise saying you picked up from friends, family, a book, the Bible. It could be worldly wisdom. It could be spiritual wisdom. I have no doubt whatsoever that in the minds and life experience of absolutely every Open House listener, there's a gem of wisdom. What's yours? 1300 40 2020 or post on our Open House Community Facebook page. And if you've never called us before, is that you? Never posted on Facebook for us. I'm especially interested in hearing from you. It's an all-in-all. Whoever you are, 1300 40 2020, what's your gem of wisdom? While you do, let's take a bit of a look into the future. Charles Brass is from the Futures Foundation, which promotes greater interest in and understanding of the future. Charles, welcome to Open House.
Good evening, Lee. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Charles, 7 billion, a lot of people. How can we begin to understand that number, get our heads around it, do you think?
That's the really good question. In a country like Australia particularly, that's a really difficult question because we have, by world standards, a very small population in a very large space.
Yes, that's right.
But let me give you a figure which is interesting. If the entire 7 billion population of the world was living in Hong Kong, for example, which is Hong Kong is one of the densest developed parts of the world. If the entire population of Hong Kong was living at the same density as they are in Hong Kong, they would take up a space the size of Greater Sydney.
Wow.
We are spread across the entire planet, but we are actually spread relatively thinly. Although, for the first time in recent history, 50% of the world now lives in cities. So there's been a big migration into cities, and some of the cities in the world, like Hong Kong and others like Lagos in Nigeria, are now very densely packed and have very large numbers of people. And people are flooding into the cities because this is where they perceive greater opportunities to be at a great rate.
So how long did it take for the world to get from 6 to 7 billion, Charles, and how long before it goes to 8?
Actually, that's an interesting question. It took an incredible long time to get to the first billion, and it's been taking increasingly shorter times for each successive billion, but the trip from 6 to 7 took slightly longer than the trip from 5 to 6. Mm. It took about 17 years to get from 6 to 7, and the estimate is that it's going to take about the same or a year or two longer to get from 7 to 8.
Okay. How many people can the Earth sustain?
This is perhaps the real question. Listeners may recall that in Australia we had a population debate about a year ago. The government initiated a population debate attempting to answer that question, and various people have been reported in the press at various times attempting to answer that question. And it's like so many other questions on this massive scale, the answer depends on which scientist you talk to. In Australia, Dick Smith, the entrepreneur and philanthropist, has a very, very strong view. This was about Australia's population, that Australia's population was already too big to be sustainable. Yeah. And there were other equally credible scientists who were of the view that no, Australia could stand at least double its population, 50 or 60 million. And the same applies on a world level. We really don't know. What we do know is that the state that many of these 7 billion people are living in is deplorable. A very, very small percentage of the population live in the conditions that your listeners live. And we do know that it would be completely unsustainable for all the world to live in the conditions that people in Australia, or the great majority of people in Australia, live.
Yes.
But exactly how many we could support at some sort of survival level is a really interesting question.
Yeah. It demands a lot of gratitude from us to contemplate how we live compared to the rest of the world. But for now, with 7 billion people, now that we've reached that milestone, how should that change the way we think about our everyday lives, Charles?
As you said in your introduction, no one quite knows who the 7 billionth child is, but we do know there was one. And that perhaps is the salient point. No one will remember when the 6 billionth happened, but as I said, it was less than 20 years ago. And I think that's the reminder for us. We are growing at that rate. We are expanding across the face of the planet with all the consequences that that means. And I think that the real question for us as a species, since it's us that's doing it, no one's driving this, it's humans that are making this happen,
yes,
is how happy are we about this? Is this what we want? What do we need to do? What are the consequences of this for us? And how does this mean we want to live?
But for a country so privileged and so rich as Australia, like everyone here, or the vast majority of us, how should we think about our future, our lives, and how they might change to have a better world in a way?
For your audience, which is so predominantly Christian, I think this is a really deep question.
Yeah.
By any measure, we live in a privileged world, privileged part of the world. And we know now that we live in a privileged part of the world. You can't turn on your television or read a newspaper without being aware of the privilege. Just north of us, in the last 12 months, we have seen huge floods in Thailand and on television, and floods in Pakistan. And while I might want to talk about the floods, leaving that aside, just those images have shown us and given us an opportunity to compare the floods in Queensland and what the people in Queensland looked like as they were navigating those floods, and what the people in Thailand and Pakistan look like when they're navigating those floods. Yeah. And I think that should cause many Christians to reflect deeply about what our role in the world is, particularly with the debate in the country now about immigrants and people who are attempting to escape conditions that we couldn't live in. We would find absolutely deplorable people who are attempting to escape those in sometimes very dangerous ways. And what our response to those people ought to be is, I think, a really profound set of questions.
Charles, as you look to the future, you're more on about challenging us in turn to create the future. Can I ask you what you mean by that?
The future, in one sense, the future doesn't exist. The future is a space that we are evolving or moving into. And for most of the planet's history, I mean, Earth has been around, we think, for a long time. For most of Earth's history, that movement, that evolution, if you like, into the future, has been controlled by forces beyond human beings. Increasingly, over the last 9,000 years, as the population of the Earth has approached 7 billion, the actions of human beings have been affecting and shaping that movement into the future. And so the real question, it seems to me, is how conscious are we, how aware are we of the impacts we're having, and how desirable do we find that? And it seems to me if we ask those questions, we're likely to also start deciding how we would like things to be and perhaps modify our behaviour to make it more likely that things will be the way we would like them to be, rather than just saying or pretending it's beyond our control.
Yeah.
And hence either lurching into something that we don't want, or worse, being driven into something by people who are prepared to take the time to think about what they're creating.
Yeah, it's a good point. As you contemplate the future of the world, the future of people, technology, industry, science, even politics, world power, what are some of the things that you believe will be part of our future then?
This might give me an answer to a way to answer the question you've invited your listeners. You know, what one piece of wisdom would you give to someone? I've got three children of my own, and I started this life. My business card had futurist on it for the first time 20 years ago, and my children are now 25. So they have grown through this life, And they have asked me, you know, why is it that you live the life that you live? And the answer to that is the piece of wisdom I would give everybody, and that is that recognize the power that each of us has in the world and use that.
Yeah.
The opportunity that I've been given is to talk about these issues. I mean, you invited me onto a radio program because of the organization that I'm part of and give me an opportunity to talk about these things. I'm using that power because I believe that is what we all need to do as we go into the future. So the question you actually asked was, what do I see when I look into the future? Well, I've got two answers to that because I can see two things. The thing that I fear most is collapse. The thing that I fear most is that we will not take the time to understand our impact on the planet, and that will cause serious destruction. This has happened before. There are a number of really profound civilizations, really deeply religious, deeply scientific civilizations that simply don't exist anymore. The two most powerful examples that most people know about, but there are others, are the Egyptians who built the pyramids and the Mayans in South America. We have no trace of them. They bear no relation to almost anything alive today. They came, flourished, and disappeared. My fear is we'll do the same. My hope is that we will have developed sufficient wisdom to avoid that. And that would be what I would tell every newborn child today. The power you have and the awesome responsibility you have is to play your part in thinking through these issues.
With your hopes and your fears, do you end up being an optimist for the future or a pessimist?
You couldn't do what I do if you were a pessimist.
Yeah, I bet. That's right.
But I will say this. Another extremely well-known Australian physicist called Paul Davies has recently written a book called The Goldilocks Enigma.
Hmm.
And the reason for the title is the old Goldilocks story. You know, Papa Bear's porridge was too hot, Mama Bear's was too cold, but Baby Bear's was just right. And he, in this book, points out that there are so many dimensions of this world that appear poised on a very fine knife edge. And if they were a little bigger or a little smaller, or if they pointed in this direction instead of that direction, the world wouldn't be able to exist. And he likes to believe, and I like to believe as well, that a world that can develop the sort of civilization that we have, that can have understood so much of the world that we live in, is also capable of ensuring our own survival.
Yeah.
So we're in a bit of a Goldilocks environment, if you like. At the moment, things look pretty desperate, and we're a bit worried about it, but things will be just right, which is not an excuse for doing nothing. It is an excuse for being extremely vigilant, but I end up as an optimist, believing that perhaps the Goldilocks effect is there with us.
Charles, I've thoroughly appreciated and enjoyed our conversation on Open House. Thanks very much indeed for joining us.
Lee, thanks for the opportunity.
Charles Brass from the Futures Foundation.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.